Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I'm bidding a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, traders and investors. Welcome to this Monday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Digg on the show today. A couple guests for you. We're going to have Tommy Lackey, as we do every Monday, and then before him, we're going to be joined by Lenore Hawkins of Tematica Research. And so Joel, why don't we get right to it? How are we doing the S&Ps this morning?
S&Ps are trading down a buck and a quarter, 23.58 even, just hanging above yesterday's low. Crude up a dime at 50.70, still continuing that rally from last week. Gold and silver in the red, gold in the red by a buck at 12.46.30. Silver still in the $18 handle at 18.18 and a half. Dennis, how you doing on this Monday morning?
I'm chilling here, looking at a flat market. It's pretty quiet. How's the weekend?
Not bad, but back in the saddle here. No real good April Fool's jokes. Did you pull any?
April Fool's.
No. The Gremlins, what about you, Spencer?
The Gremlins, the April Fool's jokes. That's what it was. It was
just late.
The Monday morning Gremlins. It was a delayed April Fool's joke. So gotcha. Okay. Gotcha, everyone.
Well, we're back here now, so we're rocking and rolling here. And the mover that's always rocking and rolling seems to be Tesla here. Whenever you get a few days of consolidation, then it decides to blast off into orbit again. We got Tesla up 10 points. This is going to challenge a new all-time high here today, 288. Now you start thinking 300 just seems inevitable here. But it's up 3.5% here. Spencer, what's the details?
That's what happens when you deliver 25,000 cars in Q1, about a 69% increase from the Q1 2016 year over year. So that's a new quarterly record for the company, about 11,500 of those are Model X, and 13,500 were the Model S. Remember, the Model 3 is just a few months away.
How many cars do you think Ford delivered in Q1?
A lot.
I would like to know that number. I wonder if there's a way we could quickly try to find that out, because you get 25,000 cars, just, you know, comparison purposes, because now you're looking, let's just quickly look at the market caps here too, and it could be a race here, Spencer, if you want, but let's compare the market caps of the big three, and we're going to call Tesla one of the big three here now, because it's currently got a market cap, actually as of Friday, so I don't know if I have this detailed, Friday's market cap was $45 billion. It's Ford. Is it even a? It's got to be.
I don't know. I'm looking at deliveries. You can look at. I'm trying to find deliveries for the quarter.
46 billion Ford, 45 billion Tesla. So actually, today, probably Tesla's passing Ford in market cap. That is absolutely incredible.
Actually, well, Joel, no, Tesla passed Ford last week.
Oh, it was last week. Okay.
Yep.
So. More market cap than Ford. It's right close to GM. GM's at $52 billion. All I know is everywhere I look, I see Ford and GM, and I don't see any Tesla cars. So, I mean, I guess they think Tesla's going to take them out, or Tesla's going to, you know, take over, and everybody's going to have just a Tesla on the road, because it doesn't make any sense to me valuation here. But, I mean, the momentum in this stock, you just can't fight it. So I'm not coming in here shorting the thing, but holy cow. When it's all of a sudden worth more than Ford, does this not seem ridiculous?
Pre-market high of 289.60. We backed off a buck 60 from that level. Seems like it gets a lot of pops in the pre-market. Still ends up higher on the day, but you know, just less liquidity. You can get it up there, you know, much higher. Former all-time high made in Tesla. Now, that wasn't a high back in 15, but 2014. You had an all-time high of 291.42. So there you go. We're only a couple bucks away from that. That's your bogey on the upside. Saw some Ford commercials, I believe, during the Final Four, and they were talking about innovation and driverless cars and how they're going towards that route. So I don't know if it's just a too little, too late or whatever, but we've been talking about the price action in GM and Ford. I mean, GM has had nothing but great numbers, and the stock goes absolutely nowhere.
Yeah.
David Einhorn tooted his own horn last week, and you know what? The street slapped him right across the face, as has that stock going right back down. So it's just you know, it's just, it's there. You see the moves. They have the earnings. But what the changes of the car industry are going to be, if you're looking at the stock market and you look at the price action, going to be a whole lot of Teslas on the road.
Well, investors are just, you know, putting their money where they think, you know, that it's moving to. And they think that Tesla's going to take a bite out of Ford and GM. And that's why, you know, they say Ford and GM are basically value traps. And that's why they don't rally. And they think Tesla's going to continue to, you know, take over. And obviously, we're going to see a lot more Teslas on the road here eventually. Maybe that's the case. But, you know, when I just see Tesla with a market cap above Ford now, I think, holy cow, you know, I feel like it's way late to the party if you're investing in this thing now, but maybe not. Maybe eventually there's going to be just as many Teslas on the roads as Ford and GM, and then you'll be happy that you bought Tesla at these prices, I guess. But I just don't see that happening. The infrastructure they have to put in, I think it's a long ways in the future. I own Ford in my investment account. I still like it as a value. 5% is paying me at least to wait a bit. I think the dividend is safe. Long term, I guess, who knows if Tesla's, you know, going to, you know, be dominating the car market or not. But the market seems to think that they are.
I keep coming back to what Nick said last
week.
Yeah,
there we go, Stock Hunter. Go ahead, Spencer.
Oh,
that's exactly right.
All right, I wasn't even looking at that. But, yeah, it all depends on how you view Tesla. Do you view them as an automaker or as a tech company? Because if you view them as an automaker, then, yeah, they're crazy, crazy expensive. If you view them as a tech company, they're maybe not so expensive. And Nick said he now views them as a battery company, right? And more so, you know, along the lines of Amazon and Google and less so along the lines of Ford and GM.
And there's always, you know, we got to, you know, the media always wants to justify price. You know, that's what, you know, we say analysts chase price. Well, media chases price too. You know, we're always trying to put justification behind, you know, when you see run-ups in stocks and, you know, we've had just a huge run. You can't argue with the momentum in Tesla. I mean, this stock has just been absolutely incredible. You know, 2013, this was a $30 stock. Here we are 3 years later, and it's a $278 stock. Stock's up 900% in three years. The question is going up another 900%? I think the easy, my argument is, I think the easy money has been made in Tesla. You know, it's had the big move. You're up 900% in 3 years. If you think, you know, this thing's going to have a market cap of, you know, going to go into the $200-$400 billion, I guess, you know, you still buy it here. But I just don't see that happening. You know, at the high end, we saw, you know, when GM and Ford dominated the space, their market caps, you know, were, well, I don't know what it was pre-debt, but, you know, before the companies, but, you know, their market caps were, I think Ford was a $35 stock, so, you know, $100 billion or something. But and for me, this is just, you know how I invest. Everybody's listening to the show. I'm all about value. I can't find the value in this. So can it, you know, continue to go up? Sure, it can do anything, but I'm not going to be part of this party.
All right, you want to cover one more here before we bring in our first guest of the day?
Yeah, let's just quickly talk Barron's. We're going to get Tommy. Well, actually, Tommy, we got him right now. It's already 8:15. Or no, actually, our other guest. It's not Tommy.
Yeah,
sorry.
Tommy's going on 8:35. Right. So we have Lenore Hawkins right now. She's the chief macroeconomist at Thematica Research and the author of ElsEconomy.com. We're going to call her over in Italy. So we'll be right back with Lenore Hawkins. Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. We're on the line now with Lenore Hawkins, chief macroeconomist at Thematica Research and the author of ElsEconomy.com. Lenore, how's it going this morning? Well, not this morning for you, because you're in Italy, right?
Yes. I'm enjoying a nice sunny afternoon.
Nice afternoon for you. Well,
it's kind of nice to get a head start on the markets.
You do. So why are you in Italy? Give us a little bit about your background. Are you more of a futures, macro person? Why are you over there?
I'm doing mostly macro, but I was brought over here to help some of the wealthier families in Italy manage their portfolios. And their portfolios are a little complex in that rather than having, say, shares of a company, they own like 20 or 30% of, say, some publicly traded company or 100% of a privately held company. And they have enormous portfolios. So they are subject to a lot more macro risk than, say, an individual. So I help provide some kind of advice with them and also help with some of their technology companies, bringing them into the U.S. And all of that kind of ties in nicely to the work I do with Thematica Research, because I kind of have boots on the ground dealing with what's actually happening in Europe, because these guys are exposed, my clients are exposed to such big influences of what's happening in the global market. So I get to experience it not by reading about it, but by actually seeing it firsthand.
So now that obviously We're in Q2 now. How are you approaching the markets now differently as opposed to maybe you were at the beginning of Q1?
Well, in the beginning of the year, I was still thinking that people were very optimistic about the Trump trade, right? You know, and there was all this just excitement that he was going to change everything. And we've seen something similar with almost every president. When you get a brand new president in, everybody thinks, ooh, yay, it's going to be great. We're going to get such a fantastic change in the government, particularly when you have one party control. There's a lot of enthusiasm that this time things are really going to change. But when I looked at, you know, everybody was comparing Trump a lot to what happened under Reagan, and there are such differences. The fundamentals just didn't support seeing a lot of what we saw with Reagan, seeing that under Trump, regardless of what Trump does or doesn't do, the base of the economy is very different. So I was looking at thinking, well, I'll enjoy the sentiment for a little bit, but that's going to wear off very quickly. And one of the things that I saw, too, was this enthusiasm around the reflation trade. And we had some kind of a confirming data coming in, but that data was very misleading. Because if you remember, back in early 2016, we saw oil plummet. We saw all kinds of commodity prices just tank. And when you look at those on a year-over-year basis, the percentage change is enormous, like oil, you know, up over 100%. So that when you think about how oil affects the price of everything, because energy is in everything, it's going to give this sign that, wow, prices are really rising. But that's really more of an effect because we were at such a tiny low level. And if you look from now going forward, that we're not going to see another 100% increase in oil, you know, outside of some sort of massive geopolitical crisis. We won't see something like that happening. So I think a lot of these indicators that people have been saying, see, look, the reflation trade is on, I think those have been really misleading, and we're going to see those start to roll over here. So I'm shifting around, and I think that is going to catch everyone on their back foot. So I actually have been looking at hopping into some bonds that have been really depressed.
Such as?
Look, I like be looking at the 10-year treasury or, say, TLT. That's a really easy, nice ETF to get into.
Okay, gotcha. So talk about how you sort of like evaluate the market. So there's all these macro indicators out there. We have the Fed, but we have, you know, economic data coming out like every day or every week. Mm-hmm. How do you sort of, you know, negotiate all that information when you're putting together your ideas?
Well, I try to keep it really simple because the economy, I mean, it can just be so complicated. And like you said, there's so much data to look through, and some of it can get really exciting and it can kind of lead you astray. So I try to look at it very simply. The economy grows based on just two simple things: the labor pool and productivity. So for the labor pool to grow, people have to either work more hours or you have to have more people working. Now, we don't have a whole lot of growth when it comes to that. We actually have the labor pool growing at the slowest rate we've seen in decades. It's barely growing. The working age population is barely growing at like 0.4%. So unless you really get that going, and I don't, you know, how's Trump really going to affect that? You could affect it by increasing immigration of working age people, but that's not really politically the direction we seem to be going. So, or you can increase the number of hours. And what we've been seeing is actually the number of hours people work has been decreasing. So I'm not super optimistic on that side. Then you can look at productivity and say, well, is productivity going up? Well, productivity's actually been at very suppressed levels. And that, you can see, is sort of a natural outcome of companies not really reinvesting in themselves. Companies have been doing lots of share buybacks, and they have not been spending money on capital expenditures. Like, that CapEx has been really suppressed. When you have low CapEx, you see that productivity is not going to go up. So if we want to get the economy going, you know, pretty simple. Look at those two things. And then when we talk about spending, because it's like, oh, the consumers are going to spend. They're going to spend. It's going to be great. Well, spending, the only way you can spend more is if you make more money or if you borrow more money. If you look at the year-over-year, what's been going on with actually weekly earnings, and if you take into account the number of hours worked, weekly earnings on a year-over-year basis, the actual take-home is down 0.4%. And then if you look at borrowing, well, the lending standards are actually starting to tighten, so that's not increasing borrowing. We're seeing rising defaults on subprime auto loans, so that's not very good to see. We see credit cards starting to tighten. We see all kinds of credit indicators are getting tighter. So that tells me that it's not likely we're going to see a whole lot of more borrowing in the future. So if people aren't making more money, and if they can't borrow more money, how are they going to spend more money, regardless of how enthusiastic they may be with that, you know, Michigan Consumer is Sentiment Index hitting a peak?
We're on the line with Lenore Hawkins, Chief Macroeconomist at Tematica Research. Lenore, I just want to get your take. You're over there in Italy. You're, you know, managing, you know, money, portfolios, and you're keeping abreast of the macro situation. You know, we have the Brexit going on. We have the new Trump administration. Really, nothing really seems to foul this this market. What's their perception, you know, over the pond, you know, on the new U.S. Administration?
Well, two things. One, they're very concerned with the unusual way that Trump has been interacting with Europe. For example, making the accusations about the UK spying on him, that over here has been very disturbing because they just like, what is going on? This is not something that a U.S. president normally does. And his interactions with Angela Merkel was also very stressful for this side of the pond. People are not sure what to take of him, and they've just never seen a president kind of behave the way he's been behaving. And on top of that, all of his talk, this anti-trade, given that Europe is really needs to keep trade going, and particularly Germany wants to keep that going, that becomes very concerning for them. And it's a weird position for Europe to be the one that's really arguing for more free trade with the U.S., saying, no, we want to put up more protectionist barriers. And they also, most people in Europe also look over at the U.S. and think that the U.S. stock market is just grossly overvalued on a relative basis compared to what's happening in Europe. So there's declining interest in investing in the U.S. markets at the moment.
Lenore, a question from the chat now. Do you look at debt levels like credit card debt when you're kind of viewing?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Those debt levels the savings has been going down significantly, and debt levels have been going up. So that's, I mean, when you see debt levels going up and you see where the standards, the banks are reporting that they're tightening their standards, that tells me that spending is going to be a little tougher.
Lenore, I have a question for you. You talked about some of the portfolios you're managing. They're private companies or they're big holdings or something. How do you hedge exposure? You know, we look at the options markets, and you know, sometimes options can be very, very expensive. How do you put hedges on? Do you use other companies in the industry that you have exposure to? Do you use the futures markets? How do you mitigate some of the risk in this market?
More like from a macro basis, and looking at options at futures, and a lot of it has to we do using currencies or say using commodities that are related to the companies that my clients have.
All right, that's a pretty good and succinct answer, I think. Lenore Hawkins, she's been on the line with us this morning. She is a chief macroeconomist at Tematica Research, the author of LsEconomy.com. It's where you can find her writing and her blogs at LsEconomy.com. Lenore, thanks so much for hopping on with us today. We will talk to you again soon.
Thanks so much.
All right, 8:26 now. Anything changed a whole lot since the show started, Joel?
No, we're just dancing around unchanged here. 59.25 was our settlement. Trading up a half a point at 59.75.
We're going to jump into a couple Barron's stocks here, and Barron's is pumping Under Armour, it looks like, this weekend here. Under Armour actually coincidentally is getting a downgrade at FBR Capital, but you can see that Barron's has more pull, it looks like, than FBR, because actually Under Armour is in the green. They're on the cover of Barron's.
Yeah, the headline there is Under Armour stock is ready to rebound. It is actually, and I guess I didn't realize this, but according to the Barron's article, it is the worst performer in the S&P 500 over the last year.
I believe it, but why do they think, you know, now is the time for Under Armour to rebound?
Now is the time. Well, part of it is the fact that it's been such a laggard that you know,
I just think valuation is just getting cheaper now.
Yeah, and they're also they had a cool little graphic about the company's spending and compared to its peers, Adidas, Nike, Russell Athletic, and they're not underspending, you know, compared relative to their peers. So they are buying up new business sponsorships and the like. And generally, just like the fact that it's out of fashion right now is like the general sentiment. Obviously, you don't need me to tell you that, or them to tell you that either. But the article seems to just give a little breakdown of why there's precedent for a comeback. You know, Nike kind of had the same thing a few years ago, and this is sort of reminiscent of that.
Did they give a price target, like how much they think this thing could rise?
I didn't see one. Let me look more a little bit more closely.
30% is what they said. So
that would take us up in the mid-20s again.
Yeah. They're opening a store down here, right? Downtown, just kitty corner from the office. I have absolutely no Under Armour gear, but...
I like it. I do. I like the Under Armour stuff.
I have a lot of Under Armour gear.
I like the Under Armour stuff, too. So, you know, I'm, you know, actually kind of a fan of the product here. The reason, you know, and I've looked at this a few times here, you know, just, you know, because you know how, you know, I invest. You know, this isn't trading. This is completely different than trading. But, you know, I like to buy stocks when they're out of favor in my investment account. So this is one that would be, you know, on my radar here. But then I look, and you really start analyzing numbers, and you're like, it's still trading with a pretty hefty multiple there. So it keeps me away from it, you know. That's, you know, why, you know, I don't invest in stocks like Tesla. It just hasn't worked for me. But in the long run, you know, I've always, you know, just, you know, and I've been burned. You know, I've been in the markets a long time. I got burned in the tech bubble a little bit, you know, from an investing standpoint, financial crisis. I don't like paying multiples now that, you know, are above 20. And, you know, Under Armour is pressing, you know, quite a bit higher than that. Now the earnings have come down, so that obviously inflates the multiple. But when, you know, retailers out of favor here, hire multiple retailers, that's why I still stay away.
And this to me seems like kind of the money line in the article. It's actually closer to the bottom of the article. They say that a bottoming of let me get the whole thing here for you. But a bottoming of sales growth soon, followed by a return to PEPier increases, looks more likely. This is with regards to, you know, people maybe buying now, worry that the stock could go down to $15, but a bottoming of sales growth soon, followed by a return to PEPier sales increases, looks more likely. So the way they're framing it, it looks like they're approaching the bottom of the sales cycle and they're due for a rebound.
Well, let's look at the price action here. I'm looking at what should we do? Should we go UAA here?
Sure.
Yeah, UAA. Getting a little bit of a pop here. 2012 is your last print. That's up on the sessions. That's up quite a bit. Well, not quite a bit. Went off in 1978. A lot of different ways you can look at this. You know, if you just want to look a little bit longer term, if you're looking at it from a swing trade perspective, you know, buying it here in the, you know, in the higher 19s or lower 20s, you're looking for some kind of rebound. Cuts out 1840, even give yourself a little more room under 18 bucks. You could have a good risk reward ratio. On the upside, I don't see this thing really getting a good boost. There's a lot of highs at the $22 area, just above that. So, you know, buy it here with a, you know, stop it out below 18, or if you want to buy it on strength, a break above 22 here. I will say the only reason I may be looking at this, you know, for the next week or two is sometimes, you know, person who wins the Masters. Didn't Jordan Spieth, isn't he an Under Armour guy? So there you go.
It can sometimes help it.
Yep.
And it hurt it last time, I think, actually, which was surprising.
I think it ran up ahead of time. And no, that was in the tournament that he choked.
Wait, is that what it was? That was the choke. And
was that
drop,
the Masters, or was that, yeah.
That wasn't stocked. It was like $40.
Yeah. So looking for some catalysts.
Just looking, you know, at analyst estimates here, too. So they're anywhere from next year from 64 cents or 30 cents up to 64 cents. You can go to the high end, though, say 64 cents. You're still looking at a P multiple around 35 on this thing. I know it's growing. I know it's still a growth company there. But, you know, when you're concerned about retail, you're concerned about, you know, am I going out and buying companies with multiples of 35? I'm not, personally. So just because the stock, you know, this is a good lesson. Just because the stock has declined significantly from the price that it was doesn't necessarily mean that it's cheap. And that's my opinion of Under Armour. I just don't think it's as cheap as a lot of other people think it is.
All right. Let's see here. Tommy Lackey's coming on in 3 minutes, but we got a few more stocks we can cover.
Yeah, one more here. Sorry about the echo. We know there's an echo going on, and Spencer's working on it. Moving on, just Kite Pharma, KITE, getting a big lift here in the pre-market. KITE is trading up $3. And we've been talking with the biotechs for a while here, and the biotechs actually have been back in favor for the last month. It's been rotation, and money has been rotating back into a lot of these biotechs here, although the last couple of weeks they haven't been. But Kite Pharma taking out the 80 resistance level there, getting a little pop here this morning.
Yeah, they announced an ongoing response rate for their drug that treats patients with aggressive non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And an ongoing response rate, obviously good news.
Well, the good news is it popped up 84, 87. The bad news is it's leaking here, and it's leaking pretty badly. We are $4.50 off that high. Yep, that's correct, $3.50. So, I don't know. When you get a pop like that and then you don't get the follow-through, you think you may just come back down. I'd be more interested to see this come down and test the former resistance at the $80 level, three highs in a row and a higher 79 handle. So to me, it's easier to pick out support than resistance. That 84, 87 high, if it gets back up there, I expect sellers again. 85, 79, just above that, was your high on March 21st.
Let's go grab Tommy Lackey here at 8:34. So Tommy's in the chat. He's rearing to go. We'll go grab him. We'll be right back at you.
Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep, brought to you by Benzinga Pro. I'm your co-host, Joel Elkanen, along with Dennis Dick and Spencer Israel. And we have Tommy Lackey on the line of Relativity Capital Advisors. Tommy, how you doing today?
Doing great. How about yourself?
Oh, we're here on this Monday morning, and just wanted to talk to you here. I like your comment last week when I believe you were on last Monday, and we had a big decline in the S&Ps, and we were pressing you for an answer, the catalyst, what's going on, and your response was, well, it's not so, I really don't care so much what caused it. I just kind of want to look forward and see how to interpret the news and what to do next. And those turned out to be pretty good words of wisdom. What's your take here now on the general markets?
I think we're in a little bit tougher spot right now, but I think last week should have given you some good information, and right now, I think it tells us that you still have to be cautious because you didn't quite break through back through the breakdown point on the S&P 500. But the Russell and the NASDAQ 100 both performed pretty solidly on the week. Russell probably being most important because it looked like it was ready to break down pretty hard out of that longer consolidation. So the fact that we got back into those, I think, is strong. And then there was a lot of strong stocks this week that moved really well. And so, again, underlying still looks pretty good. The breadth, as we talked about last week, was kind of washed out. And that divergence on the McClellan oscillator is something you really got to watch. And it popped up there, and it looks like it paid off.
And what are you looking for in the markets this week to see if we're just ripping back up the new all-time highs or maybe we're just settled into a little bit of a trading range?
Yeah, I think that actually, I mean, it's hard to call until we get started and see how things are. Beginning of the quarter, the first 2 days often get some good flows, but we came into it pretty strong as well into the end. So I think what we look for is, as I said in the notes up top, is that you just want to make sure and see if the NASDAQ 100 can hold the breakout. S&P 500 can get over that downtrend line. Those are probably the two most important things to me this week, other than, you know, if we just completely fall out of bed and fail, then I think we all got our answer. But as long as we still kind of fight in there, and you might get the chop like you're talking about as it tries to get through that trend low, trend line on the SPY, and the QQQs try to hold the breakout from the end of the week. But I think, you know, we got to sit up and take note that those actually did go and break out at the end of the week after the previous week. Almost everybody was chattering about, again, once again, we had the end of the road.
All right. We got a very popular stock here on the Nitrous Scan, CMG, finally clearing 450 here. Is this the time to get to buy the breakout in CMG?
You know, it's one of those areas that we talked about the breakdown at 380 so often, and now it's moved its way back up to the 450 area. You know, I would like to see it consolidate for a few days to a week, maybe a nice little flag. I could even be comfortable with it pulling back the 430 range with where it's at, 425 to 430. But outside of that, you know, if it breaks out from here, I think you could give it a small shot, but I wouldn't be putting in a full position after a five-day run. So, it's a $430 stock keeps a lot of people on the sidelines anyway. But if you're going to trade something to the side or trade the options, you want to either give yourself a little bit of time here or you want to see if it flags out a little bit after Friday's not-so-pretty candle.
Esteban 364 in the chat, have you taken notice of the big buyer in the VIX as of late? He's labeling them the 0.50 cent guy. Have you noticed that at all?
I really don't.
Okay.
Don't pay a whole lot of attention to it. I'll see spikes here and there, and then I like to look and see if it's gotten outside of its Bollinger bands, because in a good uptrend, anytime it does, that tends to be the close to the end of weakness. But no, outside of that, I don't pay much attention to the VIX, and I don't like trading any of the VXX or any of that kind of stuff. Yeah. Too many other good things to trade.
Someone could be covering a short too, as opposed to going to long.
Certainly could.
Now here's a pretty easy symbol. Rice. Tell us about the recent price action in RICE.
Yeah, Rice is a name a lot of people don't know as well. You know, it's one of those that kind of flies under the radar, but it's come off these lows, late February lows, pretty strong, and has run up right to the 150-200 SMA after it broke out of that base. Now, at this point, it's been sideways, up to sideways for the last 3 days. So I'd kind of see where you could play it over 24 on this one, or once you get over 24, or if it wants to pull back and back test that breakout at 2150 to 22, I'd be paying attention to that one as well. There's a good moving average cluster right in that area.
Rob Hood is getting, wants your thoughts on KEM. Stochastics are resetting. What are you looking at here in KEM? Ooh, that's a tough one there. Trying to clear 12 again. Did it once. Now just hanging up here at the $12 level.
I'll tell you the biggest problem I have with this one for Rob is it's a great sideways move. He's right hanging at 12 and all that. But when you've got something that's this size, the trend has been this strong, and yet it's still this thin when you look at volume. I have a hard time not either trading extremely tight on that breakout or trying to get it more on a pullback and seeing if I can find somewhere. Because this one right here has been running pretty hard and moved sideways, which is great. But as thin as it trades, it can get harder to gauge those types of moves.
Boyd Gaming, BYD, what's your setup in Boyd Gaming?
You know, this is one of the gaming plays that doesn't get as much attention. Las Vegas Sands, Wynn, all those, MGM, all tend to get the attention. This one has not really been up there, and yet it's been moving back and forth between this 20 to 21.5, 22 zone for the last couple of months. And then for the last year, this 21.5, zone has been a real big area. So it broke out of that, and it looks like it's moving. Now, the tough part about this one is the Macau numbers might make it difficult to buy in the next day or two, but I'd be watching this 2150 area and seeing if it can consolidate in this area at all, because that weekly breakout looks like a longer-term move ready to roll.
All right, BJRI moving out of a W pattern, and looks like on volume. Give us your setup here.
Yeah, this is just a base breakout on volume above all the important moving averages now, and most of the shorter-term ones all the way up to the 50-day have all turned up. Your 100 and 200 are still slightly sloping down, but they're all below where we are now at about 3850 area or below. And so this is one to where, for now, if someone wanted to try to get on a breakout here, if it does break above this area or Friday's highs or however you want to move it, say it keeps moving, you could trade it against that 38 area or so in the moving average. But it looks like a good longer-term reversal. The real key here is going to be 42. And 42 is where the large weekly downtrend line comes in. And so, again, if you're a shorter-term trader, you got to target between here and 42. If you're a longer-term person, you just got to be willing to wait out that and or be willing to ditch it up there at 42 if it decides it doesn't want to get through that trend line.
All right, one final one from you from the Nitrous Scan. Apollo Capital Management, I can remember them, 2016, doing all kinds of deals and everything. It looks like it's paying off a little bit for them. A nice run up here in 2012, perhaps another leg up in Apollo Management. Give us your take on that.
Yeah, and this one is, this caught my eye for two reasons. One, that it's had this nice run up, but yet this level right here, it still looks like a pretty important level there at the 24 area, where it has some really big volume going back a year, year and a half in this same zone. So getting over this zone can be important. And the other scenario is looking back at the notable options trade that Options Hawk Options Database puts out, that I work with Joe on. A portfolio. Looking at that, this thing has four or five just bullish trades stacked right up in front of us, right in this area and above, in the 25 and above area, looking like people are trying to game this one on back up. But look at that volume footprint too, though. It's been getting much stronger as it's been rising, not falling off.
Just one more before we jump into the meltdown scanner. From the chat, Dr. J wants to know about Seagate STX.
You know, STX was pretty in the news last week, had that big surge up and then couldn't hold it. So you got to kind of watch. At this point, I'd want it to get over that hot Thursday high at a minimum. Really, you got to look and you've got a gap right up there at 48 that closes at 48. So really, you want it over 48 if you're looking at this thing longer term. And so you got to be careful there, because if it falls below 44 here, it's got a big gap to close down there.
Jumping over to your meltdown scanner, Lululemon on it. Not surprising, because this stock got murdered on its earnings report last week. We were talking about the 50 psychological level. Couldn't quite get there, got to 50-50, but then the next day put a low 50-52. So a little double bottom there gives some bulls some hope here. But is there really any hope here on Lululemon, Tommy?
This, you know, to me, this is the look both ways play. You know, this is one to where, and I like to do those in different months when you use options. So this is where you buy a shorter term put option just in case it does fail, and a little bit longer term call option, maybe even slightly higher. So you're going to play both sides of it and see kind of how it goes. I mean, if you want to take one side or the other, you got to wait till it breaks above or below Thursday's range. I mean, it's got to go either above or below Thursday's range where you really want to get into this one. To try to work either side if you're only going to work one side.
IBM's also in your meltdown filter, and this one's just had some quiet consolidation the last three trading days, quietly consolidating under 175 here. Big Blue had a pretty good year in 2016. If we just look back, it was actually one of your better performers. It started the year in 2016, way down $120, and finished the year up at 170. Continued for the first month here, but now it's lagged here in the last month. What do you think going forward here on Big Blue?
Well, same thing. Looking into the Notables database, you have a good bit of options flow, and most all of it's bullish. And a lot of it's mid to longer term dated. So at this one, you know, you might have a little bit more down move, maybe to that 100-day moving average around 170. But again, on a $174 stock, a move down to 170, you got a pretty clear stop below that if you want to, and there's some levels between here and there that might catch it. So I would rather take this one on the long side because of its activity and because of how well it's performed. And, you know, from a fundamental standpoint, it's got some turnaround potential as well, from what I understand. And so I would say that with what's there, I would be looking at more potential higher versus lower on this.
Exchange CME Group is on your meltdown filter as well. This thing got upgrade actually on Friday, but then closed in the red. So, you know, not a good candle there for an upgrade day. CME, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's definitely not a good candle for an upgrade day, but I think we even talked about that last week, is oftentimes upgrades will fade for that day, and then you see how it plays out. But, you know, with CME, And one of the things I put here in the notes on it is it is down near support, and it still has, it has bullish options flow as well. You know, everybody reads these things differently, and that's one thing I can't take credit for, is where I get my options flow data and all that. And it's just, when you, once you put that kind of behind some of your trades, it gives you a lot more confidence in how you're seeing things. And this one, to me, looks like it has room down to 116, but outside of that, it still looks like it's on a bullish, near bullish support.
Just a ticker symbol here we haven't seen in a long time, Zebra, which is Zillow Group, ticker symbol Z.
Yeah, this with Zillow, same thing. I was just kind of looking through the database and trying to figure out some things that look strong out there. And this is one that has been noted. And we're right at support again. Right at support and a lot of good bullish flow. And so it's one of those areas to where, especially for you guys that like to trade against levels, this 32 level looks like a great level to trade against. And if you've got some pretty solid bullish options flow on the other side of it, it gives you something to work towards.
Stocks that's had a little bit of trouble this year, Navistar, NAV, started the year up near $32, now $24 here, and just kind of quietly consolidating near the lows.
I put this one on for more to make a point. If you look at it on the daily, it looks like a very long falling wedge. And most of us, I love falling wedges, because when they do break out the upside, they can be very strong and very quick moves. However, I don't think people give these types of patterns enough credit for their potential to fall out the bottom as well. And I put this on as a look both ways place for that reason. It's more for just kind of take a look at it, because when you get these big falling wedges, a lot of guys will get excited about the potential to go out the top, but you need to be ready for them to go out the bottom as well. Because even though it has all the characteristics of a falling wedge, if you look at the internal trading, it still looks pretty sick.
Just from the chat here, David B. wants to know about MYL, Mylan Labs. The stock is down here again this morning. There's a little bit of concerns on some recalls on the EpiPen. Stock has been in the doghouse for a while, but had a good February and March. Did come back. Now it's coming back. It seems like to test those lows that we had back in January in the mid-30s. We're trading here this morning at $38. This is on my radar just because I, you know how I like my value stocks, and there is some value here with Mylan Labs. I think its forward multiple is around 6, but you know, a lot of uncertainty here, obviously going forward with this issue as well. But what are the technicals saying?
The technicals, I don't think, say much very good. I mean, it's pressing down on the 200 SMA and 100 SMA. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, 200 and 100 SMA. It's pressing down below the 200. It's down on the 150 SMA, actually. And it continues to want to move back down, like you said, and test those lows. I don't think there's anything here that says we can make any different of an assessment. On balance, volume's dropping pretty hard. Now, the only thing that's right here is the bottom of the daily cloud. There's a lot of people who use cloud on their charts, cloud-type data. It's right there at the bottom of that. So short-term, you might get a bounce. But I think unless they can get back over that 200 around 4086, you probably continue to head lower.
One thing of note on this Mylan Labs here, and I was looking at this when it had that rally, and it really got back to the area where the whole EpiPen controversy started, right? Mm-hmm. Where it fell off from the $50 level, and it had that big old decline, and then got back. I think they might have had some earnings in that area too, but sometimes if you look at noteworthy news events, the impact that they have on stocks, and then they recovered back to that area. 46 definitely represented, if you do the timeline right in there. All right, Tommy, great information as always. Thanks for coming on. Tommy Lackey, Managing Partner and Portfolio Manager at Relativity Capital Advisors. Speak to you again next week, Tommy.
Thanks, guys. Y'all have a great week.
Thanks, Tommy.
Can we get a quick imbalance look? We didn't get those earlier.
Sure. Let's go look here. GE, 128,000 to sell. That's somewhat significant. GE has just been quietly consolidating for the better part of 2 months. The stock has been very quiet. Morgan Stanley, 45,000 to sell. Alibaba, which is trading higher here in the pre-market, actually has 64,000 to buy here this morning, so that's going along with the pre-market action. Jumping over here. One note stock, which we haven't talked about here today, HPE is actually 35,000 shares to buy in HPE. And if you're coming in this morning and saying, whoa, what happened at Hewlett Packard Enterprises? Because it was close to 23.70, is trading at 18 bucks. They completed the spinoff here today, so it's actually trading in the green. The adjusted close is 17.76, so it's actually trading up 23 cents here in the pre-market. They've now completed the spinoff of their services business. It's going to trade under the, they merged it with computer sciences, and it's going to trade under the ticker symbol DXC, which is going to be DXC Technologies. That will start trading here today.
Wow, so they split and then they spun off something as well?
They just spun it off. So it's just a spin off. Well, so
no.
Hewlett Packard Enterprises.
To the original split.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're, that.
Oh, right. Yeah.
The
You're
original split and then the spin off.
Yeah, they just keep spinning stuff off.
So how
a lot of companies in here.
Yeah, so how can you ever figure out the value of the company after all that, you know?
Spinning off businesses. So, yeah, they merged this one with computer sciences, and now it's trading under the ticker symbol DXC. But I don't believe it started trading here, but I believe it's supposed to trade today. Right, Spencer?
That is my understanding.
Yeah, so DXC. I've got a pricing for it now, so we'll have to. But I haven't seen any trades go by, so I don't believe it has had its opening trade yet.
Wow,
DXC.
You talk about some financial engineering there, and pretty good going on there by Hewlett Packard. 8:55 here. We got a few minutes left, Dennis. Did we cover many ratings changes?
Well, speaking
no,
of...
No, you know which one we did miss, too? What were we going to say, Spencer?
I was going to say... I was going to go to a rating, speaking of HP, but what were you going to say?
I was going to say on the Barron's when we were talking earlier, we didn't mention Lowe's, because they were positive on LOW as well. And Lowe's in the pre-market is actually trading up a buck on the Barron's pop here. Ooh. So LOW getting some life here from Barron's. What do they have to say about, what did Barron's say about Lowe's?
The headline there is shares could rise 20% or more. They highlighted specifically Lowe's as it compares to Home Depot and some key metrics there. They like their management. And they're expected to have $68 billion in revenue this year compared to $100 billion for Home Depot. But they kind of looked at the key metrics there, and they like Lowe's.
And the stock getting a nice little pop. We could challenge that high, $84. Is that the all-time high, Joe? I believe it
is.
Oh,
yeah. Yep. That all-time high was just made in the month of March at 84 even. That was earlier in the month. Hit did quite get there in the pre-market, though. We got a pre-market high of 83.48, but that just looks like a little bit of an odd lot traded there. To me, boy oh boy, much rather bought a breakout here going through the 82.60 level. You had four highs right there from the last four sessions of last week, so I'd be more apt to, you know, let this thing come back down to that former resistance and see if it acts as support. And as I mentioned, the all-time high made last month right on the nose at 84.8.
Also, Barron's did a little bit of a... They pat themselves on the back a little bit. They wrote about Barron's... they wrote about Home Depot favorably in a cover story. They said 3 years ago, since then, the shares have doubled. But they also pointed out the fact that home improvement is one of those areas where Amazon can only really penetrate so far due just to the nature of the goods, and they're large and they're bulky and they're hard to transfer, they're hard to ship, and so they noted that Lowe's only gets 4% of its sales from online sales, and 60% of those sales are actually picked up in the store. So they're still getting, even the online sales people are still getting, that they're still getting people to the stores, which is interesting.
Because when you're building something, you need the stuff now. You know, there's no waiting on that. If you're a construction company and you need to go get your stuff for your job, you know, you're looking at that and, you know, trying to, you know, you're short this, you're short that, or not even that, just even getting the initial material list for your initial job. You want the stuff now.
That's obviously it, but, like, I mean, that's Amazon can do. The speed isn't, I think, to me, because Amazon can do the speed. Amazon Prime is fast, crazy, crazy fast. I think it's more so just, like, the sheer size of the goods. I mean, it's hard.
How do you ship that efficiently? Yeah. You got a truck full of lumber here. It's not that cheap to, you know, Amazon's not going to be able to, you know, ship it right to each individual house. It'd be really expensive to do that. So they're saying these are, like, Amazon-proof, then.
I mean, as Amazon proof as one could be, maybe.
How Amazon figures it out.
Yes, right, exactly. A couple other ratings we didn't get through. Guggenheim upgraded HP this morning. This is interesting. Argus
HPQ? The original? HP?
You know what?
Oh, HP. It must be HP.
It's just HP. Argus initiates Snapchat at a near-term hold and a long-term buy. So I guess near-term being the next year, long-term more than that.
It's been consolidating here, too. You know what? This Snapchat is interesting, and obviously no valuation. I have no idea on this thing. It doesn't make any sense to me. But short-term, you know, you can trade anything, and, you know, trades are always made. And I know, Joel, you love your 50%. You know, 19 up to almost $25, 24.5. Take half of that. We didn't quite get down to a 22.71, but you're kind of rounding here a bit. If we could get back up over, I would say, the high from the last 3 days, which is 22.85, we're right there right now. Say this thing gets back up over 23, you can start moving up to that high 24.40 again. I think there's some room there.
Yeah, area of control here really is the 22.50 area. You had two closes last week at 22.21 and 22.23. But closes on Wednesday and Friday at 22.55 and 22.53, double bottom and 22 even here. So it's taking a little time to decide here, but definitely can read from the consolidation here. This is gearing up for another move. All right, Spencer, 8:59. You want to wrap today's show and let us know what's on the docket for tomorrow.
Tomorrow we have some favorites. Nick Shaheen, obviously, as we have every Tuesday. Also, Angie Setzer, the goddess of grain herself. Haven't really had her on in quite a while, so we haven't spoken about the commodities in quite a while. At least, you know, the ones that she follows, the grains and the corns and the wheats and all that great stuff. So we'll be chatting with Angie and Nick on the docket for tomorrow. Hope you enjoyed today's show and our chats with Tommy Lackey and Lenore Hawkins. You can catch the whole thing again on our podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher, or just replay the live show on YouTube anytime you want. That's it for us today. Please remember that all the information, material, and content from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investment advice. Have a good rest of your Monday. We'll be back with you folks tomorrow.
Whether you're a short-term swing trader or a long-term investor, you need to check out Thinkorswim, brought to you by TD Ameritrade. There's a reason why Thinkorswim has been named the number one trading platform, because it has it all. With Thinkorswim, you can trade stocks, options, futures, Forex, and virtually every other type of order. Get notifications on mobile devices and interact with other traders in chat rooms. You can also use technical indicators and see the latest investing and trading education in Think Money magazine. If you want to keep up with the markets, you need Thinkorswim. To experience everything Thinkorswim has to offer, open a TD Ameritrade account today. Thinkorswim, the online trading platform for traders and investors. TD Ameritrade, member SIPC. All investing involves risks.